Okay. Like to officially call the meeting to order, the January 19th, 2021 regular session of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, commencing at 6 p.m. Brandon, would you be kind to give us the roll call?
Yes. Vice Chair Anna Clark?
Present.
Member Joseph Coyle? Do not see him on the list. Member Antonia Landau?
Present.
All right, one second. Member Wood just jumped on. Let me do my thing. Co-host. One second. Sorry, guys. Member Ron O'Dell?
Present.
Member Philip Saletta?
Here.
Thank you. Member Matthew Wood?
Here.
And Chair Temple?
Here.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Brandon. Next item is a call to audience. Do we have any of those, Brandon?
So Chair Temple, if you wouldn't mind just reading the blurb for the call to the audience, but no, I did not receive any advance request to speak, okay. But once you read that, we can open it up.
Alrighty. Okay, a little proviso, which is standard. I will now open the meeting for call to the audience. During call to audience, you may address the board on any issue you wish that is not on the agenda. However, it will not be open for discussion. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual board members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the board may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. With that said, as at this time, anyone who is participating through video link may raise their hand. Those on the phone can dial *9. Brandon, do we have anyone wishing to address the board?
So yeah, again, nothing in advance that I got submitted via email. So we'll give everybody a second here to see if they want to raise their hand or press *9. So just give it one moment, Chair Temple, excuse me.
Okay.
All right, I still see no hands raised at this time. So if you would like, Chair Temple, you can close the portion of call to the audience.
Okay. Okay, I will thank you, Brandon. I will now close the call to audience. Brandon, what's the next item?
So next on the agenda is council liaison comments.
Okay. Council Member Joyce Jones-Ivy, do you have anything you wish to report today?
She just jumped on, Chair Temple. Let me make her a co-host and get her set up.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much. The only thing I'd like to report today is I'd like to invite everyone that is available to please help CDO High School. They are working on their end of the year graduation celebration. And if you're not able to attend the January 29th meeting, or if you're a little bit skittish because of the virus, if you could please go to their website and make a donation, because they do need Home Depot cards as well as other gift cards to help them obtain their supplies. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman Joyce Jones-Ivey. Chair Temple, you want me to move on to the next item?
Okay. This is the consent agenda, and the item, first item on that is to review and approval of the November 17th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes. Do we have any discussion on the November 17th, 2020 minutes? Okay, I will then move to approve the November 17th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes. May I have a second?
Second. This is Matt.
All right, Matthew, Member Matthew Wood with the second. We'll now go to a vote. Vice Chair Anna Clark?
Aye.
Member Joseph Coyle? He's not present. Member Antonia Landau?
Aye.
Member Ron O'Dell?
Aye.
Member Philip Saletta?
Aye.
Member Matthew Wood?
Aye.
Chair Temple?
Aye.
All right.
May I have the next item, Brandon?
Yes. Item number two on consent agenda is consideration and adoption of calendar year 2021 Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting schedule. I'm going to put that on the screen for everybody to see.
Okay. I think those were also part of your agenda packet, but with that said, do we have any need or any discussion before I make a motion to accept this? Okay, I move to approve the calendar year 2021 Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting schedule. May I have a second?
Second.
I second.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. I believe we go to a vote for this one as well.
Yep.
All right, here we go. Vice Chair Anna Clark.
Aye.
Member Joseph Coyle is not present. Member Antonia Landau?
Aye.
Member Ron O'Dell?
Aye.
Member Philip Saletta?
Aye.
Member Matthew Wood?
Aye.
Chair Gary Temple?
Aye.
All right.
All right, we're into the regular session agenda now, and the first item on that is welcoming a new CRAB member, Antonio Landau. I could personally welcome Antonio because I was on the committee that interviewed her, and I can say without a doubt her background and experience clearly stood out in the interview process. So with that, does Christy want to insert anything in her?
Thank you, Chair. Before we introduce our new member, Antonia, I would like to recognize Chair Cachueta, who will be leaving us, who served for 2 years. There he is. Charles just pulled up his video. He served for 2 years, was very vocal about serving the youth in our community and making sure that group of citizen is represented. Oftentimes they don't have a voice, and he was definitely a voice on their behalf. And so from the Parks and Recreation Department. Charles, thank you so very much for your 2 years serving on our board.
No, thank you. It was a pleasure to serve with you all. I'm going to miss you. And welcome, Ms. Landau. You're going to have fun. You're working with such a group, nice of people. And I wish you all the best. And I'm here. I'm a resident of our valley. Whenever you need someone, whenever you need some help, you can count on me. If you need to do a survey in Naranja Park, Philip Saleta, I'm here. We can go there, ask people to answer our surveys. Okay, you guys can count on me. But thank you so much.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, we'll still have a lot of work ahead of us, even past this master plan. And so with that, as Chair Temple said, we had several applicants, and through the interview process, Antonia Landau was incredibly impressive, represents a wide variety of Oro Valley citizens with a lot of different perspectives. So with that, Antonia, if you'd like to have an opportunity to introduce yourself, please do so.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here and be joining this group of people to work on these amazing projects you are working on. My name is Antonia. I am an Oro Valley resident for just over 3 years. I personally am an avid outdoors person. I love hiking and running. Always have enjoyed our beautiful weather we have here in Oro Valley. Additionally, I am a mom of 4 boys, so we spend lots of time outside. We spend lots of time in organized sports, and just as a family, we like to be involved in outdoor activities. And then professionally, I am a nurse. I have a background in both mental health nursing and understanding the holistic process of taking care of mental health. And in addition, I am a critical care nurse. I've spent the last year working in COVID in the ICU, but recently at the end of last year, I took a leadership position, and I'm working as a nursing manager now. So I bring that professional background to this group as well. I'm happy to be here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And I think if the rest of the members would like to unmute and just give a brief introduction in terms of name, real brief. We have a heavy agenda tonight, so brief would be awesome because we have a long time to get to know each other. So maybe Gary, Chair Temple, would you like to? Even though you've already met Andrew and Antonia, go ahead.
Well, I think Antonio knows me from the interview process. I just welcome her here. I think she'll be a welcome addition. And I still have 1 year left to go. I'm going to step down from the chairmanship, but I'll still be part of the regular session. So I'll be working alongside her, and I look forward to that.
Chris, you want me to go in just roll call order here?
I think that'd be easier rather than bedtime.
All right. Vice Chair Anna Clark, you want to give a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Antonia, I'm really excited. I'm not the only female on the board anymore, so yay. So I kind of have a fun story. I've been in Oro Valley since I was 16 years old. I actually used to be employed as a staff member and work the summer programs here. So it's kind of fun that, you know, here I am so many years later raising my kids here in Oro Valley. And so it's really a unique opportunity that I have, you know, once growing up and being participating in these parks and recreation programs, now really helping to shape the direction that our town needs to go. So again, welcome. I'm excited to look and looking forward to working with you.
Thank you. Member Joseph Coyle.
Hi, everyone. Joe Coyle. Antonio, nice to meet you via Zoom. And I apologize to everyone for being late. I couldn't find the passcode, and it kept on holding me up. I apologize. Antonio, I've been living here about 5 years, probably off and on with my fiance, now wife, about 5 years before that. retired aerospace executive, served on a number of community boards, Southern Arizona Leadership, Arizona Chamber, several other ones too, of which I've either been a board member or the chair. So I'm comfortable with community service and have always stayed active since I retired about 3 years ago on a number of boards that I'm very interested in, this being the top of the list because I love being in Oro Valley and welcome aboard.
Thank you, Member Coyle. I just got your voicemail. Sorry, I was trying to juggle everything. I'm glad that you were able to get in.
Brandon, I appreciate your help always. I should have reached out quicker.
No problem at all.
As soon as I got frustrated, would it save me some angst?
Yeah. All right. Next up is Member Ron O'Dell.
Welcome, Antonia. I'm Ron O'Dell. I've been on the board now starting my third year. I've been a resident of Oro Valley since 1992. I was you a few years back. My kids are gone now. I've seen them, coached them, done everything through Oro Valley Parks and Rec. And now that I'm an empty nester, I joined the PRAB. So I've been in the Parks and Recreation field for 30 plus years and was compelled to join this organization a few years back. So welcome aboard. I think you're going to be, you're going to find this is a great organization and your voice will be heard.
Thank you. Next up is Member Philip Saletta.
Hey, Antonia, and welcome. I'm Philip Saletta. I've been on the board. This is now my second term, and I'm in the second year of my second term. It's, as Ron said, it's a great organization, great people to work with, good staff, a lot of things going on, and I've really enjoyed it. Previously, I was the water utility director for the town of Oro Valley and retired in 2017. So I've really enjoyed giving back to the community to serve on this board. And again, welcome and look forward to working with you.
Thank you. And last but not least, Member Matthew Wood.
Hi, Antonio. Thank you for joining. Be great working with you. Be great to be off Zoom and see people in person again. Anyway, I've been in the cement and concrete biz for 40 years. So that and I used to do all of our trade organizations. So a lot of organization stuff. And I also know a bit about concrete. So it's always good for Parks and Rec too. Anyway, welcome aboard.
Thank you, everyone. Chair Temple, we're ready to move on to agenda item number 2.
Okay. This is a election of Parks and Rec Advisory Board Chair. Before we get started, I would like to pass on a couple of things. I've elected not to continue on as chair, but I will be continuing to be a regular member of it through my last year of the four that I've been here. I would like to express my sincerest thanks to Chrissy and Joyce for their support. PRAB is very fortunate, without saying that we have both of them as co-leaders of this organization. I also would like to express a word of thanks and gratitude to Brandon and also Casey for all their diligent assistance helping this old war horse through some of the technology with Zoom. So I'm very appreciative. I just feel it's healthy for PRAB to have a diversity of members who express a desire to serve chairperson. I've been fortunate enough to be here the second year, like Phil. Phil and I came in at the same time. And I started last year was my first year as chair. The year before I was vice chair. So I think it's time to get a diversity of members, and it's been serving excellently as vice chair. So with that having said, I'd like to open the floor for nominations for chair. If I may have that opportunity, if it's permissible, I would certainly like to nominate Ann.
All right, so we'll do these in one at a time, not that there can be more than one nomination, but if a nomination has been made, which is for Anna Clark, we need to get a second to move forward.
Second.
All right. Let's see. Joe, do we go to a vote? I forget. Sorry.
Right, that's okay. Thank you for dropping over to me, Brandon. Yes, right now we would vote on this one, and if it'll normally handle itself here, I have a premonition that it'll work itself out right now.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. So we're voting to approve Anna Clark as chair. So I will start off with Vice Chair Anna Clark.
Aye.
Member Joseph Coyle.
Aye.
Member Antonia Landau.
Aye.
Member Ronald L. Dell.
Aye.
Member Philip Saletta.
Aye.
Member Matthew Wood.
Aye.
And Chair Gary Temple.
Aye.
All right.
My crystal ball still works.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So that was passed 7-0 there. I think we are clear to move on to our next agenda. Yes.
Excuse me. Who was the second on that motion?
Who?
Matt Wood.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next item on the agenda is regular session agenda item number 3, and that's the election of Parks and Recreation Advisory Board Vice Chair.
But I'd like to open the floor for nominations of vice chair. This person would step in and act as chair at any meeting or function that Anna was not able to attend.
Chair Temple, I believe Vice Chair Clark has a recommendation.
Go ahead, Anne.
Thank you. I'd like to nominate Joseph Coyle as vice chairman for the PREV.
Any seconds out there in order to move forward?
I second.
Okay. Second is Antonia Landau for the record there. Let's go to another vote. Vice Chair Anna Clark?
Aye.
Member Joseph Coyle?
Aye.
Member Antonio Landau?
Aye.
Member Ron O'Dell?
Aye.
Member Philip Saletta?
Aye.
Member Matthew Wood?
Aye.
And Chair Gary Temple?
Aye.
All right.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Passes 7-0. Chair Temple, you want me to move on to the next item? We'll change everybody's title next meeting. How's that?
Okay. Please, go ahead.
All right. Regular session item number 4 is presentation and discussion regarding the Parks and Recreation Master Plan Project.
Good evening, everyone. It's me again. And here again, you're getting used to seeing Mike Spence here on a regular basis. He will be leading the conversation. In your agenda packet, you had a pretty good background of all of the information that was is going to be presented tonight, to include the updated concept plans from the each park site concept, to include connectivity analysis. So we'll be going through that in a slideshow. And then we will be wrapping it up with, as I shared earlier, with someone where the rubber meets the road in terms of what all of this is going to cost. And then at that point, we'll open it up for discussion to hear your comments on what was presented. We have pre-identified some prioritization in terms of different buckets. We've mentioned buckets over and over for the last few meetings. And that's really where I need to hear from you in terms of what your thoughts are on this. As a reminder, we do have a study session to be presented to Mayor and Council on February 3rd. And it'll be quite a bit of information to share with them. But at that time, I'd also like to provide them with kind of the pulse of where PRAB is right now. Tonight is not an official action, but I would like to get a flavor
of the direction that you all would like for us to start steering the ship, so that way we can you know continue to move forward at your direction. And so with that, we have a 56 page PowerPoint. So grab your extra caffeinated coffee or double dipped hot tea, whatever it is you have. Mike Svets, take it away.
Thanks, Christy, for that dubious introduction. so just for that, so that everybody is fully aware, there are some transition slides in here, so it's not all 56 pages of content. As Chair Temple, PRAB members, staff, members of the public, thank you for the opportunity again to be in front of you. You will be happy to know that I actually probably will not be doing most of the talking. Rebecca Field from Kimley Horn, the excellent Rebecca Field from Kimley Horn, and the spectacular Clint Breckenridge will also be joining you to walk through this. So I'm going to stop my video, save a little bandwidth, and share my screen. Hopefully everybody can see that. Let's jump it into full mode slowly. Okay. So these are the, as Christy mentioned, these are the items that we're going to go over this evening. The connectivity analysis, we did have an opportunity last Thursday to present a couple of examples to the public in a virtual community meeting. Tonight, you will have the opportunity to see all of the mapping associated with the connectivity analysis. The final concept plans, I will touch on the process that we went through with regards to this to get us to the point of these final concepts, and then a brand new set of information for you all, which is the capital improvement plan. As Christy mentioned, the cost of doing business is in terms of improving a parks and recreation system. And then, of course, we'll close with next steps and questions. So just very quickly, these are all kind of the major components of the master plan, the community needs assessment, which we wrapped up last May, park and facility assessments, which we wrapped up at the end of the summer, and level of service standards and mapping, which we wrapped up towards the fall. We're currently in the process of wrapping up program and pricing assessment partnership review, but this is where these three elements kind of come into play. As we've said all along, this is information that builds upon itself. This is not meant to be all a bunch of independent information. So all of the information that kind of, in particular, the top three bullet points have led us to the information that we're going to present with you tonight. I can't stress enough that costs are one thing. The strategies, funding strategy around which we have to identify and give the town and you all an opportunity to implement are really exceptionally important. And that is some of the major key step that we'll be working through over the next couple, 3 weeks. So I will quickly introduce the connectivity analysis and then turn it over to Rebecca. So really, the scope of the connectivity analysis was fairly limited, but I think at the end of the day, we hope that you're happy with the results of this. Really, there were three kind of key components to it. Identify missing trail segments, identify possible opportunities to kind of generally expand the trail system, and then prioritize these opportunities to better connect and expand the trail system. So at this point, Rebecca, I will mute and turn it over to you and follow your cues with regards to next slide.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike. I will also have my video off for now for bandwidth purposes, but really appreciate the opportunity to be here again and talk with you all about this next phase of the master plan process, which is the connectivity analysis. The map that we're showing here is an overview, and we'll go into some detail on each of the lettered segments that are identified on this map. But What I'd like to show, and hopefully you're able to see it on the screens that you have, is the overall system that is being created through this connectivity analysis process. The steps that we took to get to this point are looking at the town's GIS database, which shows the existing decomposed granite paths, natural path systems, paved path, and then the existing shared use path, which is the kind of thin, maybe brown or dark red, however you want to call it. That color there is Mike's pointing to. Those are your existing shared use path systems within the community. The dark red or the thicker red are the proposed connections that were identified as part of this process. And again, we'll go into detail on each of these more. But what's exciting about the potential as if you're able to kind of gauge where some of these lie is that it's really creating a very comprehensive connected park system within the town of Oro Valley. Through these connections, we can tell the community that we could go from one park to the other or into every park within the system, every major park within the system, without a vehicle. And it really opens up that potential to increase the number of visitors. It has the opportunity to limit vehicular traffic on some of the roads and then just create that other opportunity for exercise and recreation within the community via these shared use paths. So if you could flip to the next one. So I'll just start with the image that's shown there on the right, that 12-foot wide shared use path, just so it's clear what we're describing when we're talking about this system, those thick red lines that we're showing. What we're proposing is a 12-foot wide paved shared use path in the areas that we've identified in these various segments. There are a number of existing shared use paths within the town of Oro Valley, as you can see with some of the thinner red lines that are also 12 feet wide. And 12 feet is generally the standard for a asphalt path that could be used by both bicyclists and pedestrians at the same time. So it gives you ample width to have multiple uses. The first connection that we're going to look at is item A, which is extending the existing shared use path, which you can see there in the thin line. Mike, if you could move your cursor over there at the south of Tangerine Road. So we're looking at extending that connection from Tangerine up towards Rancho Vistosa Boulevard to provide a stronger connection to the north. North of Tangerine is an area that we've heard through many of our outreach processes with the public that there's a desire for additional amenities in that part of the community. So this is an opportunity to provide a non-vehicular connection between two major roadways. And it's also something that there is partnership with the county in terms of acquiring funding for this effort. So we think it could provide a real improvement and a real opportunity to add connectivity to the Rancho Vistoso area. The other connection shown on this map is area, item B, which is providing a more direct connection from the north to Catalina State Park. There's a connection that is present from the south, but if a user is, especially if they use this new trail identified as A, they come down from Rancho Vistoso to this area south of Tangerine, they'd have to pass the current connection to Catalina State Park and go back up Oracle. And so this shortens that and enables them to go right across to the state park. We'll move to the next slide. So item C is something that also really is an immediate strengthening of the connectivity between some of the existing infrastructure that is in place. And it's definitely one that comes with its challenges, but it's a recommended pedestrian bridge across the CDO Wash. It would connect Riverfront Park to 2.69 miles of linear park along the CDO. and then it has the potential to connect further south, as you can see in some of those other items that are shown there, D and E. But that first point of bringing people across the Wash right there next to Riverfront is something that is feasible, and it's something that would be a strong improvement for the connectivity within the area. And paired with that, if we look at item D, which is a new shared use path that provides a continuous non-vehicular connection to James D. Cray Park, that would take advantage of a small piece of existing pathway that does exist there, as Mike is pointing out, and then further south as well. So it provides linkages between those, and then again, offers the opportunity paired with item C to go from Riverfront all the way to JDK Park without having to get in your car. The other item shown there is a new shared use path providing a connection to the Linda Vista Trailhead. It's an opportunity. There's an equestrian connection there, and this is another opportunity to expand that park-to-park connectivity and allowing for a shared use path in addition to the equestrian trail in that same alignment as it leads to Coronado National Forest. We'll move to the next one. This is one that we also heard a lot about as we outreach to the public, and this is a connection to Naranja Park along Naranja Drive. And this would be a recommended shared use path that would provide that connectivity that we heard a lot from the residents that's something that would be strongly desired. So it is something that would be paired with roadway construction. So it would certainly be a partnership, but it's an opportunity there again to provide a major connection and enable us to link the parks as we describe in that first overall slide. Also along those lines, the community center is a big destination for the community as well. So providing an opportunity for that shared use path, non-vehicular access from Naranja to the community center via a new shared use path along La Cañada improves the overall connectivity within the system as well. Go to the next one. Here are, you know, as we look further south, so James D. Cray Park is in the upper limit of the image shown there. So if you recall, one of the previous slides had that connection further north all the way to Riverfront. There is connectivity through James D. Cray Park, and then we could continue on that via Calle Concordia. So it would be a shared use path that would link up to Northern Avenue. And then the connection there that we're showing at Northern Avenue expands upon an existing small segment of shared use path, which exists there between Calle Concordia and Hardy, and then would continue south along the Northern Avenue alignment to provide connectivity to the park and to the retail community without having to access Oracle Road. Oracle Road is certainly not desirable in terms of encouraging pedestrian use along it. So we looked at the opportunity there along Northern to connect to the backside and then also provide that complete connectivity to the parks as well. And as we go to the next slide, we see that it continues south on Northern all the way to Tohono O'Toole Park. So that is an area that doesn't have a lot of recreation opportunities right in that piece. So adding that shared use pathway, connecting to Tohono O'Toole, and then enabling the access to JDK and ultimately Riverfront and Naranja and the parks to the north will strengthen that experience for the residents in this area. Also, item K is a school connection for the Cross Middle School and Harrelson Elementary along Chapala Drive. So the idea there is to link up the schools with the parks and the retail so that, again, the community can access these amenities without having to get in the car. If we go to the next slide, we're looking at some additional school connections. So item G, again, was that connection there along La Cañada at the community center. And to expand on that, we're recommending a shared use path along Lambert Lane that goes next to Lambert Lane Park and then up north on La Cholla Boulevard hooking into some of the existing shared use pathway networks that exist further north of Naranja, and then providing those connections between the parks and Iron Ridge High School and the Wilson K through 8 school as well. I think this is the last one. So we're looking now north of Tangerine Road, and again, looking to expand that connectivity and the experience for the for residents on the north part of the Oro Valley community. We mentioned item A was that connection from Tangerine to Rancho Vistoso, but there's an opportunity to expand on that in the possible conversion of a sidewalk to a shared use path along Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. There currently exists nice sidewalks in the right of way, and there's a very real opportunity to convert that into an off-street bicycle facility. As we've looked at, you know, shared use paths throughout the state, we recognize that there are different types of users for these systems. And while many are comfortable riding in bike lanes, there is a whole other subset of the population that would use a bicycle facility if it weren't immediately adjacent to traffic. So what a shared use path does, especially in this condition where we have the existing bike lanes, it could continue to be used, but it allows an area for families and for those that just aren't comfortable riding on street to have a place to ride their bike as well. And there's the space there within the right-of-way to provide that connectivity if desired by the community. This provides connections to Honeybee Canyon Park, Honeybee Preserve, and then the schools, Painted Sky Elementary, Innovation Academy as well. Item O is expanding on that loop system, but it's a connection to the former Vistoso Golf Course property. And, you know, given the potential for that area, a connection up to that would be important as part of the overall network. And then lastly, item P is a new shared use path along Moore Road, and it just provides a connection to the west, to the Marana boundary, and allows linkages beyond Oro Valley to some of the other destinations within the area. So again, if we flip to the next slide, we can kind of see the overall for the area north of Tangerine and the big picture highlighting the areas that we just discussed. And then if we flip to the next one, we can kind of see south of Tangerine, which are the linkages between the various segments. And then as we look at the overall, you really would have the opportunity to go from, for example, Tohono O'Toole all the way to Honeybee Canyon Park and not get in your vehicle, which we think is very exciting and you know, something that the community could be very proud of.
And so one thing we wanted to do to ensure that this information just didn't get lost within all of the capital improvement, the holistic capital improvement plan that we'll talk about later, this kind of gives you an understanding of the magnitude of cost based on conceptual connectivity analysis. We feel pretty comfortable about these numbers, but of course they can, change over time. All of this information is based on today's dollars. I think a couple of things to point out that Rebecca mentioned is that the very first connection that she showed, the Tangerine Road to Rancho Vistoso community, that shared use path extension would be funded through Pima County, though we have to show it. It would just that Pima County would be the funding source. And then the other one to identify that has a potential funding source to it would be the Naranja Drive shared use path, since that would be something that would be done in conjunction with the roadway project. So again, this is just some preliminary cost estimates for that connectivity analysis, but the grand total is just a little bit north of $10 million. But just to keep in mind, I think it's important to recognize that we shifted the scope with regards to this master plan coming out of the community needs assessment, where trails were exceptionally important to the community. both in terms of need importance, as well as unmet need. And so we feel like we have been tried to be very responsive to the community as a whole and that our desire for trails by at least touching on all of these potential connections that could be made to strengthen your off-road, transportation network through, bike, pedestrian, multimodal connections that don't incorporate vehicles. So $10 million is that preliminary cost estimate for all of these connections. Again, we would expect that number to go up just simply because of the fact that it is in 2021 dollars and we're not going to be able to do all of these tomorrow. Brandon, how would you like to handle raised hands?
Yeah, I think this is a long enough presentation. We can just take them as they come from board members, if Joe's okay with that.
That's not an order issue, Brandon. We have no problem at all. We can take their questions as they come up.
Sounds great. Ron, I believe you had your hand raised.
Yeah, very quickly. How far west is the Moore Road connectivity piece?
We are recommending it basically to the Marana limits, if possible. The idea is to get it as far west as we can.
So that's,
Shannon Road. Shannon Road, I think, is the border.
Is that to Marana or through unincorporated Pima County to Marana?
Let's see, Mike, could you go to the overall exhibit because it shows it further out there? So if you see it, it's item P up at the top. Yellow is what's listed as the town of Oro Valley limits. So to your point, I'm not sure if beyond that is unincorporated Pima County. We just kind of kept it to that limit there, basically in line with the La Cañada alignment, respecting that limit as shown.
That's definitely Pima County. I live up
there. Pima County right there. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other board member questions, I guess, before we move on? Member Joseph Coyle?
Yep, need to unmute. Just a question, alternative. Everything you're looking at is paved path. Looking at the price tag, is there any other options that is less expensive that would still serve bike and pedestrian?
What we priced, or what we were assuming as far as this price, was an asphalt condition, which is less expensive than, a concrete sidewalk. But certainly there are alternatives for non-paved systems, like a stabilized decomposed granite or something similar. The challenge with that is for bicycle users, it definitely becomes less desirable, especially for if we're looking at families with strollers and that, not a mountain bike or kind of off-road. So it's a little bit of a balance there. And I think in areas where the anticipated traffic isn't as much in terms of bike users, and this would be something that would need to be further evaluated from a kind of a resident survey or overall perspective on use, we could look at some of these converting to off-street, non-paved connection as well.
But the answer to your question, to my question, then, is this is a least cost alternative if you wanted to still enable bike paths.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. And then with it being an asphalt paved, further on you have operating costs at the end of your presentations in terms of existing as well as proposed.
there would be costs. Yes, sir.
Does the upkeep on paved paths. How often does that get redone? I know that in terms of roads, it's more of like an every 5 to 7 year type of topical hot pave over. Does it go much longer if it's going to be used for bike path and pedestrian?
We've seen in some of our other park system projects or like Pima County Loop projects that it's generally, like you're saying, around that time span before things start getting too cracked or have issues before they need to be resurfaced. So that's about the same time frame. It depends on, you know, the use levels and the kind of subgrade that it's sitting on. If you design it right, then it's going to last longer. But you know, the lowest long-term maintenance is concrete, but you'll get the costs up front for that without a doubt.
Okay, thanks, Rebecca. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions before we move on? Doesn't look like I have any board members with their hand raised. Okay, Mike, your team, you guys are ready to go.
Thank you, Brandon. And thank you for the questions. Great questions as always. Appreciate them, especially along the way. So at this point, we're going to go through the concept plans. You all have had an opportunity to see these once. However, we wanted to, again, kind of frame where this is at within the overall process. So when we talk about site-specific park master plan, and so this is a site-specific process, you know, obviously you're looking at community needs, you're looking at existing facility assessment, inventory assessment, and all of the things that we've looked at with regards to a master plan. Keep in mind that this is something that was that came directly out of Town Council's strategic plan to have these parks updated as part of the master plan process. And so it's important to recognize that this is really pre-design phase. The cost that you will see associated with this is a magnitude of cost based on concept plans. So it's really about what will work. And how can we be responsive to the community's needs? There are, you know, 3-4 other phases that are much more detailed before you even break ground that you have to go through. So I think it's exceptionally important for everybody to understand that these are concept plans. As the community looks to implement them, I am sure that there will be more community engagement. This is not meant to be the end-all, be-all in terms of final design, layout, placement, and so on and so forth. Though I believe that both Rebecca and Clint have done an excellent job of analyzing each of the parks and facilities that they were intended to or that they were charged with doing, I think it's exceptionally important to recognize that this is not the last time that the public nor you nor Town Council will have an opportunity to weigh in on what we would call the final design that leads into construction documents. So as we've said before, these are the locations that we will revisit. Tonight, we're going to really just kind of focus on, again, you've had an opportunity to see the preliminary concepts before they went to the public. So tonight is really going to be focused on the comments and the changes to the plans that resulted from the community comments. So as you know, we presented the concept plans virtual community meeting in November. We presented them to you all in November as well. And then we posted them on the town's website, you know, basically for an entire month. Prior to Thanksgiving and then ending before Christmas, we had received 321 total comments. I believe about 281 of those were received via the town website, and another 40 plus or so was received via direct email to either town administration, the department, or town council. So all of this information has been captured. And as I mentioned, the plans have been revised as a result of the community input. So at this point, I'm going to turn it back over to Rebecca. She will talk about the community center site. Then she will turn it over to Clint to talk about the changes associated with the community center facility. And then Clint will turn it back over to Rebecca to take us through the rest of the parks.
All right. Thanks, Mike. So again, the first one that we'll look at is the site plan for the community center. We did receive quite a bit of comments on this, and we did receive a lot of positive feedback. So we're looking at both the positive and the negatives to see which areas were really favorably viewed by the community and others where there were some concerns. Just to describe the color coding here, the items in black are comments that we were able to adjust within this updated concept plan, while the items in gray were areas that were either not feasible given some of the other uses on site or were more detailed items that would follow in, as Mike mentioned, there would be multiple, you know, design development phases and more detailed concept designs that would be prepared. And then the detailed construction drawings that could include some of these amenities. So we'll focus on the items, at those first four items for the sites for the community center. We did receive a lot of positive feedback regarding the pickleball court expansion. Also positive feedback on the tennis court upgrades. Those were something that were strongly favored by the community and certainly something that is moving forward as part of this concept plan. We did hear, though, that the parking lot is inadequate and that there is not enough parking. So we needed to address that moving forward. And then another comment that we received was the play area for children. It was noted that this is a community center, and so children are part of the community, and there should be an area for them as part of this plan. So as we look at the revisions, the items that are the text items that are boxed there are the main items that have been modified or are addressing some of the comments that we received that we'll go through, and I'll touch on those specifically. Item two is that reconfiguration of the parking lot to increase the maximum number of stalls. It involves repaving the entry drive parking lot and then adding additional shade trees where we're able to. And what this design shows, and we're not showing the individual striping again, but we have done very conceptual layouts of how many spots could fit within this area. And what we found was it was actually a 40% increase that can be achieved by reconfiguring the spaces and looking at the parking in a little bit of a different way than how it's currently being used. So the area as shown in item two represents a 40% increase of parking to address those community concerns. Item four, just to highlight the positive, replacing the existing tennis courts, knowing that the condition is poor and replacing that to a post-tension system. And then also replacing any pickleball courts that are built on existing asphalt as part of this plan moving forward. Item eight is the expansion of the pickleball courts, which was very favorably viewed. And then lastly, item nine, you can see it just below that light blue Ramada, Mike, right there, is a small outdoor play area that is associated with the interior children's area of the community center. You do see we have a raised hand.
Yeah. Chair Temple, would you like to ask your question?
Yeah, Rebecca, getting back to the parking lot, since we're talking about this being a 10-year-plus plan, how have you fit the way the city might be growing and how that kind of fits into this algorithm on number 40% increase in spaces?
Sure. I can speak to the overall area, and then if we want to get into kind of that, you can. It's begging for parking, but it's that gap that's shown, and that's not town property there in the center. And so we're looking at the area that currently is within the town's jurisdiction, and that's pretty much maximized in the gray color that we're showing there on the screen. The 40% increase is a significant number over, you know, what is currently existing. I think ideally we would expand further, but that certainly gets into further discussion on property ownership and some of the adjacent land use there. I'm not sure if Christy or if there's any further discussion or thoughts you have on that specifically, but we're working within the confines of kind of what was currently under town ownership.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Temple. It is, we're only planning property that we own. And so to Rebecca's point, it's all of the gray scale that's the existing parking system. It's a matter of reconfiguring. And we, you know, schematically benefit from a 40% increase. That answered your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So I will pass it over to Clint to talk about the interior of the community center.
Rebecca, thank you so much. Chair Temple, Christy, Mike, members of the committee, Mayor Winfield, thank you very much for letting us participate. I would just like to say, first of all, thank you for the town of being so forward-thinking and having this visionary process for a park. It's such a wonderful, exciting project, and we're glad to be a part of it. It really lays the foundation for a wonderful sense of community and connectivity and responsiveness to the community's needs, that it's very exciting for us to be here today. This is the existing plan, the first level of the plan as it is now with the cut-up little rooms and all sorts of things through it. And then, Mike, if you could roll to the next slide. And I don't know why our text is larger than Rebecca's. It's not more important. The feedback is wonderful. But we received a lot of positive feedback on the idea to increase space. And what we saw in the community needs assessment was a desire to have more fitness, to have flexible spaces, larger spaces, smaller spaces that could be adapted and flexed out as users' needs change throughout the day and if you have events, et cetera. So having that increased space, as you saw in the plan, was really something that we got a lot of positive feedback. Some feedback we also got was reducing the size of the bar and tweaking the restaurant area, also to really indicate the covered outdoor seating that we have on the west side that will really expand the opportunities for dining, whether they're casual evenings or large events. And then we'll receive some feedback on reworking golf shower and less restroom areas, and you'll see that in the plan. And also to increase the footprint of golf and change its entry a little bit more. We did receive some comments about keeping the restaurant upstairs, and we've tried to work through those, but balancing everything out has been a challenge of this project for over the past 5 years. Mike, if you move on to the next one. This is the existing floor plan. As I mentioned earlier, it's really chopped up, and you have an entrance over here that's really on two floors. So maybe this counts as two entrances at the main entry, and then over on the north end, you have another entrance that probably gets used just as much, if not more often, that you enter the sort of rec component of the facility. The notion that we have is to create one entrance at the existing entry. And Mike, if you slide on to the next, you'll see the yellow entry is all on ground level, and that'll become the new main entry. If you go over to the north side, there is a secondary entrance over there, but it's not for day-to-day use. Consolidating the entry over in the yellow part really makes the facility much more efficient for the users as well as staff to control the entrance, aggregate staff and administration over toward that entrance, really allows a greater efficiency and flexibility as the building moves forward. Sliding back over to the north side, we received a lot of positive comment about the layout of offices and flex space and classrooms. that you see over there. The classrooms can be subdivided or opened up, and then having sort of a large area in the purple on the northwest side for events such as tennis and swimming that have large groups coming through, whether that's registration or timeout between events, you can come and hang out. Moving down to the right in the orange area, again, having the fitness area with a lot of cardio and weight stations in this area. And this is the area where we propose taking out a couple of the structural walls and really freeing up the space and opening it and allowing a lot of flexibility with these big open spaces that we propose now. Moving over to the right, there's an aerobics area. And then continuing over to the far right of the orange is this multipurpose space. And that opens up into a covered outdoor patio where you can have chairs or various programs. This is a fun view that Carlos in our office created, giving an isometric view of the spaces. And you can see this outdoor patio complements the restaurant area. So the restaurant area can expand into the pink area for large gatherings and expand into the orange area for even larger gatherings, whether those are golf tournaments or wedding receptions or just hanging out on a jazz night at the rec center. Really is a terrific place. There are just wonderful views and sunsets from that pink area. That's really exciting. The restaurant is kind of open to the outside. It has views to the south as well as to the west. And we see people after a workout or after playing golf being able to get a burger and a drink and meet friends and hang out and chat. It's really a lovely place to be. And then as you move over to the green area, the golf, we've tweaked the golf area to propose a better entrance and to sort of free up some space for them and create some other areas. Additionally, we've rearranged the lockers and restroom areas. As Mike mentioned, there are levels of detail that we'll go through, and lockers are one of those areas that we really layer information and information on. What's the composition of the lockers? How many lockers? Are they checked out by the day, or do people rent them by the year? So that is the design moves forward. We'll really have a lot of conversation. And then the blue areas is office space for Parks and Rec, accommodating offices in that former women's locker area. And Mike, is there another slide? No. So I'll turn this over to Rebecca if there aren't any questions. Thank you so much.
I'm sorry, I don't seem to have the ability to. So I do have a couple questions. So regarding the structure, are we kind of eliminating the first floor and second floor and making it all one floor? Because it kind of seems hard to tell.
Sorry about that. If you can see in this image, the pink arrow that's sort of in the top center, go up, Mike, the large pink arrow, that one, that is all on one level. So the building was built up, the site was built up to create this kind of mid-level there that really doesn't meet its needs today. Maybe that function for the club back in the early 80s when this was designed. But technically and structurally, this can be regraded and reduce the floor, the entrance to that lower level floor and come right through going by the former locker rooms and the golf area. So that can be done structurally.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Temple, if I may. One of the other items that isn't on here because we didn't make any changes to the second floor from the original plan. So if you recall, the second floor of the community center will still keep the footprint of the existing sunset room and converting that the current restaurant space into fitness and then overall large recreation space for large activities, or that it could also have movable
partitions,
walls and partitions, so that way they could be smaller spaces. So up in we could have bridge clubs, mahjong, we could have art lecture, youth camps, etc. So it's a multi-use space, but that's why it's not presented today, because that did not have any changes from what you saw at the last meeting.
And I think the only thing I wanted to say, it's important to recognize that one of the the things that I think is probably going to get moved on as quickly as possible is the introduction of an elevator, which currently doesn't exist within the facility. And that's kind of right here in the middle of kind of right off the main entry that Clint is referring to.
Thank you, Mike.
I have one other quick question. So what is the square footage that we have now for fitness space, and how much more are we getting with this new plan?
Fitness is really chopped up. So it's really, in this white plan, you can see racquetball court, cardio, aerobics, up. The ones running top to bottom, east to west, Mike, if you can circle those, that's really fitness. Fitness moves down the hallway. And then there's the personal trainer and the weight room. That's basically all the fitness there is now. And if you move to, okay, we have some numbers over there. So that's the existing is 13,000. And then if you move to the next plan, really all of the orange becomes fitness. And then, so that's 18,000 square feet that we've created on the first level. And go back to this. And then on the second level, if you can picture where the restaurant is, there's the opportunity to have more cardio, some spin machines. Technically, on the second level, we can't put weight equipment. The structure, because of its function, didn't allow for heavy weight equipment with static point loads. But you can spread out people on the second floor. And that's about another 8,000 square feet of fitness area that can be accommodated on the second level, leaving about another 4,000 for community open space. I mean, space that can be partitioned off with movable walls, et cetera.
Thanks. And then one last question, and we talked about it with the trails, is what does a price tag look like for all of this?
I'll take that. At the end of all of these concept plans, the price tag will be, it'll all be rolled up. And so we'll show that once we're finished with the concept.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I believe
Member Coyle has a question as well. Or as he may, might have been answered already.
No. Quick question. For the, you said one of the comments that came from the community, as well as one that I raised last meeting, was the adequacy of the men's and women's locker room. Two parts to it. One, so is the actual shower/restroom in that yellow box? And the second part of the question is, in terms of lockers, you said whether it might be day rental or annual or whatever, will that space accommodate, like, just a rough order, will it accommodate like 10 lockers or 100 lockers?
Well, that's a great question. There are various ways that lockers can be divided up, whether they're the old five high with two box lockers in between, or they're full height lockers, half height lockers. There are other concepts we're seeing at clubs and rec centers where somebody may go into a changing room and then put their clothes in a locker that's out in a vestibule or a hallway. So right now we don't have a specific count, and that's something that really takes, you know, several weeks of just conversation and study, and we'll draw it up. The committee responds to that. We show different options. You know, maybe there are even tours of different facilities to see how they do it. But lockers in the shower restroom configuration is a tremendous amount of detail. But I think we have adequate space here to accommodate your needs.
Okay, so in that men's and women's locker room yellow quadrant,
yeah,
would also be planned to have some adequacy for showers, restrooms for the golfers.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And a second question, this is more to Christy, and it's going back a couple of charts. Sorry, Christy. But just a personal kind of query. For the pool that we have at the community center, is that utilized much compared to, we have such a great aquatic center also at our use?
member, I almost said council member, pardon me. I'm giving you a raise here.
Doesn't matter.
Member Coyle.
Just call me. Okay. It's easier.
It gets a significant amount of use. We have okay. a very large, dedicated aquatic aqua aerobics program.
Okay, great.
A lot of lap swim. And then we also, this is also overflow for swim teams.
Okay. Yeah, I just wondered because my knowledge is of the aquatic center, which is stellar, I believe. And I just wondered whether that was used much. And it is. Thank you. And that's great.
I have a quick question. So when you mentioned that you're trying to move everybody through that main lobby, but that there might be instances where we still use that other side, can you speak to when we might? Because the way I'm looking at this, I see that somebody trying to come to work out would have to walk through maybe an event, a golf event going on in the restaurant and all the way through the gym with their kids to get to the child watch. Is that the workflow of how we would see that happening if there was to walk all the way through the gym with the children, or is that an instance when they would be maybe using that other side?
Well, we see right now in the plan that day-to-day would be through that yellow area, and the restaurant would be, it could be walled off so that gallery in the yellow area would be separate and distinct, gives staff the opportunity to control and check who's coming in. And right now the vision and for the north area would really be for large events. If there is a tournament with lots of people coming to play tennis or a swim meet, or maybe, Christy, you help me here, if it's the summer programs where all the kids are being dropped off, maybe they're corralled at the north end and brought in directly as opposed to going through the main lobby.
That is correct. So we are looking at events, large events and or large groups of people that are here for one specific thing. So for the youth summer camp, when we have 100 plus kids coming in at like 9 o'clock in the morning, rather than having them go through the entire building, they would just come in at the area there by the flagpole, check in, and then we put them in their groups. Same thing if we have a tennis tournament, that outdoor lawn area can be their staging area. And for the most part, they're isolated to the tennis courts in the purple space.
Okay, yeah, thank
the only
you.
Thing I would add is, you know, I think I completely appreciate Member Landau's comment with regards to if she's coming in to work out and she wants to have a couple of kids and have them in child watch for an hour while she works out or does group exercise program. It's kind of a long run from the you know, where you main enter to get to potentially the child watch area. So, you know, again, I think what we're trying to do is be responsive to the community and recognize the spaces. But that, I think, is a great, quote unquote, catch from an operational perspective as well as a user perspective, that as you really get into what I would call a strong design phase, that you certainly would want to take a hard look at.
No, thank you, Mike.
Chair, looks like, did you have a question?
Are you there?
We are.
Okay. Yeah, I have. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you, Chair Temple.
Okay. My question, Senator, you know, is a follow-up on this entrance situation. Are we going to be kosher with the fire codes in terms of exit entries with something like this configuration?
100%, yes. And as Mike mentioned, with the elevator, then we become compliant with ADA.
Okay, thank you.
Looks like that is all members with their hands raised. I think we should be clear to move forward.
All right. We will move into steam pump and talking about some of the feedback that we received from the public. We recognize the jewel that this is for the Oro Valley community as far as the history and the benefits that this site has to offer. So that was something right off the bat that you know, there was a lot of feedback on the historic nature of the site. And so that's certainly something that has been in our minds and will continue to be through this process. And part of that was regarding the lawn expansion or what was perceived as lawn expansion in the original concept. We'll see in this revised version that we have clarified the areas that have lawn, and it is in keeping with the initial intent of the master plan and looking at the various periods of significance that exist on the site to the Proctor Lieber versus the Push area, and making sure that the lawn is within the areas that was identified as part of the master plan. Parking capacity was also a concern. Parking is limited, and there was a mention of encouraging non-vehicular modes of travel. So looking to strengthen the connections to the shared use path adjacent to the site was something that certainly was looked at further in addition to the vehicular travel through this and what kind of parking configurations we could improve upon. Again, there was concern regarding the use of this historic park for recreation activities. It certainly was a balance. There were a large percentage of the comments that said, this is great. We love coming here for the festivals and the various events. And then there was another side that was concerned regarding kind of the move away from history, perceived move away as part of some of the events that happened here on site. So again, we are looking to balance those two uses and respect the original intent of the master plan. And we've identified on this map Mike has pulled up the historic core boundary, which is the main core that was focused on as part of the historic preservation process. And it's something that we're continuing to respect and honor as we move forward, but then recognize that there is a potential for recreation here and for festivals and other events that could happen on this site. And then also recognizing the fact that historically there were recreation activities that happened. I was part of the master plan team back in 2007, and we heard stories of life here and how there were parties and different things. So I think it's a matter of, and you know, how that is interpreted for the public moving forward. Mike, flip back one. I think we got pretty much all the comments. Just a couple more things. Again, this is that balance. We got positive feedback regarding the new entry building and restrooms, creating a sense of entry for the site, along with the concern. So it was something that was considered. And then lots of comments regarding improvements to the heritage plantings, native orchards, and support for that. And we have some of that existing on site, and it's something that will be continued as part of this process. One area that we did get some comments on, but we are not recommending as part of this next phase of the plan, is a play area for children at this location. And again, it's that balance of the historic purposes and some of the other events that take place. And then also recognizing that during town events, there are temporary setups for children, games in the lawn or other activities that happen. And so it's those kinds of activities that can take the place of a formal structured play area on this site. So then when we move to the next, we're showing kind of that updated. And one of the things that I'll call attention to is, if you recall from the previous version, it looked maybe a lot more green. The intent of this is really to revegetate. So it wasn't to green it up. It's only the areas that are in that solid green, like where number 22 is, and as you can see kind of in the center, those are the lawn areas, and it is fairly limited. The rest of the site is native vegetation and replantings. So we also recognize the need to renovate and restore all the historic structures as needed, and we know that there's been a lot of work that's been done out on site, and so the recommendation is to continue doing that and making sure that the remaining buildings are upgraded to public use condition. As I mentioned, we're highlighting the connections to the multi-use path that's adjacent to the site. So items 9 there are enhanced connections to the trail. We are still showing a recommended entry building with restaurant, event space, and gift shop is item 10. That's something that was in the original master plan for this area and has been something that was favorably received, is creating that kind of orientation point for the site. Other areas that we'll highlight, the stage concert area with interpretive sign and 13 outdoor event space. Those areas, again, were looked at in concert with the master plan and the initial intent, and recognizing that that area shown in kind of 12 and 13 was the former pool as a recreation area for the residents of Steam Pump Ranch. So it's continuing that recreation side by having a stage and concert area function and being an amenity for visitors to the site. We also are showing the Heritage Garden as item 17 and a continuation of that and, you know, further development and growth as we continue to move forward along with that desert landscape. And then we did take a hard look at the parking. And so the vehicular circulation is updated as shown on this exhibit. And we did do similar to the community center site. We took a look at the parking potential with this configuration versus what is currently existing. And it is without a doubt an increase. And then it's also a safer condition in that there's a looped drive there at the end rather than creating some of the dead end conditions that are currently in place. So it's a safer overall vehicular circulation and then increases the parking potential for the site. And if there are any questions or no questions, we'll move on to the next park. That is James D. Cray Aquatic Center. So this is a comment that we got on several of the next few parks that we'll talk about, but the addition of lights to a walking loop and just the importance of having a walking loop within the parks to create that additional recreation opportunity while there are other uses going on. So if your kids are playing in the field, then you can take a walk around the loop and it would be lit. So you would have some additional visibility in the evening hours. There was also a strong desire for additional basketball courts. We heard this it was a pretty much consistent comment across all the parks. So there are certain parks where the addition of the basketball courts fit best within the program for the site. So this is one that we were able to expand upon that. We received a lot of positive feedback on the playground, the new playground, the off-leash dog park. The aquatic center had a lot of favorable comments, and then also the improved parking connections that were shown on the last concept that we presented to you. There was comments regarding lights on the volleyball court and making sure that those could be used in the evening or night hours as well. And then there were a few concerns regarding the noise and lights from where the concept had shown parking and the maintenance area, and an additional concern regarding the access to Diamond Fields for Oro Valley Baseball. One last concern was regarding the removal of the racquetball courts. And if you flip to the next one, Mike, you know, again, balancing that with the request for additional basketball courts and the condition of the existing racquetball courts. In this case, it made sense to continue with the plan to demolish the existing racquetball courts and convert to new basketball courts to help address that community need. We included as item 6, lights at the sand volleyball court per the feedback that we received. And then we also certainly continue to recommend that expansion area for future aquatic center and related improvements as shown in item 12. The maintenance facility is item 17, that is in the same spot that it was in our previous concept, but to address the concern regarding the lights and potential noise, item 23 is that new drainage channel and then a dense planted buffer to help mitigate some of those concerns from the adjacent residential areas. we've included a lit 3/4 mile walking loop around the park. And then again, to highlight just some of the positive feedback and some of the comments we got, we're showing the new off-leash dog park, the playground, small ramadas, and then also that refurbished playground area as well. We also have the new north parking lot and drop-off loop as far as that expanded circulation, and then are continuing to recommend that updated pump room equipment as well. Any questions on this? Next one, we'll move to CDO Riverfront Park. Lots of feedback regarding one particular item that we showed on that previous plan, and that was the removal of the multi-use fields. So you'll see that we've addressed that as we move into the next this next iteration of the concept plan. However, there was positive feedback regarding the addition of the splash pad and then the updated playground as well. We received that same comment on the additional basketball courts that were needed, and then adding lights to the volleyball court to help with those uses in the evening hours. There was concern regarding the removal of what we called for the removal of the Palo Verde trees from the parking lot. And I'll mention that that part of the plan was an indirect response to some maintenance concerns that we heard in the area, but we have addressed that concern by simply stating that maintenance needs to be considered within the landscape for the new parking, or the existing parking and then that expanded parking. There was also concern regarding the relocated expanded parking area that we showed. So we have looked to address the concern for the residents that are immediately adjacent to that. And then we did receive some feedback that some do love using the tennis court there. And so there was a concern, again, given the balance in this case, it made sense to continue with that removal and then recommend the additional basketball courts instead. So as we go to the park concept, you'll see that the number three, those existing rectangular fields are left in place. Those are certainly something that were strongly used and really asked. We were asked to keep those by the community. It was certainly a strong preference there. So those are maintained. Item two is resurfacing the parking lot, and then we're simply calling for enhanced landscape. And we want to keep maintenance in mind, but recognizing the value of existing mature native vegetation is certainly something to consider as well. As I mentioned, the tennis court in item seven is called for a removal, and then a new basketball court would be added in its place. There would be cover added to it, and then the existing basketball court would be resurfaced and covered as well. We've included lit paths around the perimeter of the site as item 10. Item 12 is the new splash pad that we got a lot of great feedback on. And then we're adding lights to the sand volleyball court as well. And then you'll see as item 19, the parking lot expansion is a bit smaller than we showed. It still adds about 50 spots, but it keeps it further away from the residential area and helps maintain that good offset from those residences to the park itself while still increasing the parking potential. All right, so we'll move on to the last one. Thank you all for hanging in there. Naranja Park, and we'll flip to the comments that we received on this one. Again, additional basketball court. So this is where we're able to add quite a few. So that has been addressed as part of this concept. Lots of positive feedback regarding the skate park, the pump track, and the splash pad, which we're excited to see. There was a multiple requests for adding the walking path around the park and more dirt trails. We're adding pickleball courts, but as many as possible is the feedback that we got. And then there was concern regarding the walking archery course and placement. And so we've made sure to clarify that is staying and it's being safely maintained moving forward. as we mentioned, as part of the connectivity analysis, there was a strong desire for that bike extension on Naranja from First to La Cañada. That is something that is considered separately as part of that connectivity plan. And then there was the desire for additional diamond fields. One thing that we are looking into and that, you know, to address some of the previous concerns regarding the Oro Valley use, we're partnering with Amphi School District to look at opportunities to expand those diamond field play areas for the community. I do see we have a raised hand.
Yeah, can you hear me, Rebecca? This is Gary Temple.
Yes, I sure can.
Yeah, my question centers around the walking archery course. You mentioned about safety issues. That's always been one of my concerns. Can you share with us any specifics that you're talking about in terms of enhancing the safety?
Yeah, we did get quite a bit of feedback on that and concern regarding how it's used and the location of some of the trails. And so what we're recommending, you know, is to maintain that walking archery course, but as part of the detailed, further detailed design development to be sure to enlist specialists within that, you know, that really know archery and kind of the dynamics of that, to assist with the development of a possibly safer interface between that walking archery course and some of the adjacent areas. So it's something as part of our programming moving forward that it would need to be further evaluated because it's a recognized concern.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I see another raised hand.
Member Coyle, you have a question?
Sorry, I was muted. Following on Chair Temple's question about the walking archery course, I do see a reasonable amount of utilization of the archery, you know, number 12, the field. Is there a lot of utilization of 21 and 22? I mean, this is making up a third of the entire park, the walking paths for archery.
Christy, I may direct that to you. Again, from the community feedback that we received, it was a reoccurring comment about what was going on with that, and people were hopeful that it would stay. I can't necessarily speak to the use numbers, though. I'm not sure, Christy, if you have data on that or if there's any additional information.
Sure. Thank you, Member Coyle. So I do know that we have significant use of our the archery facility. When people pay, if they pay a daily fee, they pay the daily fee and they can use anything throughout. Same with the membership. We do not have a counter out there, but just considering the amount of times that we have to replace target facings, I can tell you that both of the walking courses do get used pretty frequently. And I believe a lot of the feedback that came was with regard to the first graphic that was provided for Naranja Park didn't specifically call out the archery trails. So there was a lot of concern that the concept plan didn't include them, and that we heard loud and clear from the archery community that they were concerned that it wasn't there. It was simply an oversight that the existing walking trail system was not in the original plan. So this is something that we wanted to specifically call out to ensure to that archery community that they still are in there. I do also want to remind people that specifically on the eastern course, it is one way. We have it signed out there, much like downtown roads oftentimes are one way. And people are free to walk that space, even if they're not even if you don't have a bow and arrow, you just have to go the one way. It has been laid out safely. We work closely with nationally recognized course designers to put this out, to lay this out back in 2012 and 2013. But I'm the one that talked about being brief in presentations, and I'm being long-winded here. So hopefully I answered your question.
A follow-up. Is there a contractual obligation to keep the archery park that size?
We do. I don't know that we have a contractual obligation. We do have some obligation with Arizona Game and Fish, specific to some of the items that they've funded. And we do have a lot. There was, to get the archery space up and running, I believe it was in 2012, could be late 2011. There was a local nonprofit that did a significant amount of fundraising specifically for this, that general space in Naranja Park to be used for archery.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just had a comment. With all these plans, I'm disappointed to see no addition of Little League ball fields. I don't know if there's somewhere we can squeeze in two more in our parks, because, you know, we have Oro Valley Little League, and they don't get to play in Oro Valley because there's nowhere for them to play. So, I would like to see ball fields somewhere in here, a couple new ones.
Thank you. Christy, would now be the appropriate time to talk further about that partnership opportunity, or do you want to?
I can attempt to address that. So,
okay.
Right. So we're gonna see the order of magnitude here in the next slide or two. And in an effort to keep it relatively low, everything's relative, we've been working closely with leadership from the Amphi School District to talk about the conditions and the playing conditions at Wilson K-8, which is currently where Oro Valley Little League jurisdiction, that jurisdiction plays. So Oro Valley Little League is roughly Naranja Road all the way north up to Pinal County line. That's the entire region for Oro Valley Little League. And sure, a lot of the players live in Oro Valley. That's Copper Creek, Montera, and then all of Rancho Vistoso. And there's already infrastructure built, and it was built with Pima County bond dollars. And they're lit fields. And I've had an opportunity to meet with leadership from Oro Valley Little League, and they are amenable. They're agreeable that while, you know, certainly it would be nice to be in Oro Valley, but frankly, the infrastructure is already there. If Oro Valley could provide some investment in restroom facilities, in some improved playing conditions, and in the long run, potentially a parking lot, that would be great. It would be terrific for them. And so that's going to be the direction that is recommended in this plan, in an effort to keep the recreation amenities that are identified at Naranja Park, and then provide upgraded playing experience for that specific user group, because the infrastructure is already there. With a little bit of extra help, they'll have very good playing conditions.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. So moving forward on this plan, again, we've talked about many of these already. But a few items that I'd like to highlight as Mike is circling there. The new multi-use rectangular field, the scale of this is somewhat hard to gauge. And so as we're looking at, those white squares that are in there, those are all different locations for practices and games to take place within that larger rectangular grid that, or area that we're showing. So we're really expanding the potential of the rectangular field play at this facility significantly by doubling those field possibilities. And then also, as we look at items 6 and 5, the new basketball court, new pickleball court areas, responding to those community requests to make sure that we have that in place. And then looking at the parking as well, and just making sure that we are accommodating those parking areas for all the new activities that are taking place. We've included the path around the site as a request. It's about a close to 2-mile loop, paved loop around the interior of the facility. And then we also wanted to make mention of the Veterans and First Responders Memorial, which is there at item 20. And that's something that will continue, or that will be placed and will be a part of this plan moving forward. Are there any other questions regarding Naranja?
If I may add to that just quickly, Rebecca, mm-hmm. with item number 23, the 1.8 mile loop, is note that that's a lighted trail. So it can get super dark out there, and especially if all those sport field lights are not on. So we wanted to provide a safe environment for people to go out there either in the early mornings or late evenings and enjoy Naranja Park, and as well as, you know, an opportunity how to address the expansion of our trail system.
Perfect.
Member Coyle? There you go.
There you go. Sorry about that. Chrissy, to follow up on your comment just there about the lighted walking path, is that a lower lighted area so it would not be considered obstructive to the residents on the other side of the street there?
Member Coyle, yes. The intent is for it just to be a low, subtle light where it's, you can visually see where you're stepping to see if there's critters crossing in front of you.
Right.
But it's not going to glare in neighbors' windows.
Okay. And by the way, for the new multi-use rectangular fields, number 2 there, kind of to Rebecca, I mean, fields 1 are lighted already. Is there any other, I've heard comments from people that live in that community that the lights are rather bright and noticeable from their house where they weren't before. And, you know, that's part of life. But are there any other options for the expansion at number 2 to have lights that are below more of the threshold of the hill there that surrounds all of Naranja? Or is that basically to light a field that size, you got to be that high?
Well, you know, in speaking to our electrical engineers that help us with field lighting, there's constantly new innovations in the way the cutoff shields work for the light from the various fixtures that are coming out recently. And so I think that given that concern, it's something that could be looked at for those fields and seeing what the latest technology is to help with that issue. It's kind of about, you know, again, like you said, it's a large area, so it needs to have that appropriate light source. But there is, I've seen some images that are pretty powerful that show how effective some of that cutoff is for the new technology of sports field lighting.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. I would add probably some of the challenges that you're always going to encounter with regards to lit athletic fields is topography changes. And so if you're up above the park and you're looking down, or you're looking across maybe at the horizon and those lights are on, I mean, that's kind of what's going to catch your eye. It's not necessarily, there's not a lot of spill and glare really, but it's really about view shed and quite honestly, it ends up being as much about noise pollution associated with activity after dark, associated with athletic field lighting. So there's a lot of challenges with regards to always, you know, trying to locate athletic fields. I don't want to say completely adjacent because this is a pretty large property, but you're always going to face those challenges. And those are, you know, things that I think are constantly brought up during the real design phase that you'll go forward with.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are not any other questions, I'm going to move to the cost. So, you know, I think it was brought up with regards to the Naranja Park. We're looking at about $17 million. The community center building and site, and I would think you would probably, you know, there are certain things that you could phase out of the site that don't have any direct impact on the actual community center building. Such as the resurfacing of tennis courts and pickleball courts. But, you know, I think when you're doing the building, you obviously need to do parking to accommodate the increased capacity associated with the building. So the building costs are about $9 million, $8.9, $9 million. And the site improvements as a whole, including parking, tennis courts, pickleball courts, is around $4 million. Cray and Aquatic Center is $8 million. Riverfront is $4 million. And Steam Pump Ranch is about $6 million. So just to implement all of the concept plans, you know, in totality, we're looking at close to, you know, $48.9, $49, $50 million. Any questions? All right, so I wanted to take this opportunity to run through the capital improvements. You have seen two big chunks of them. So you have seen the almost $11 million associated with trail improvements, and you have seen you know, almost $50 million associated with the concept plans. So there are some other small improvements that we wanted to kind of ensure that you're aware of associated with the overall capital improvement plan. But I think it's important to recognize that we're dividing this plan, the CIP, up into what we call three buckets. And this is really to help people continue to understand that anything that you build is eventually going to have to get life cycle replaced. And so there's a cost on the front end to build anything. But again, there are certain costs associated with the concept plans that are strictly just life cycle replacement, and that is the sustainable bucket, which is bucket number one. Bucket number two, with the exception of maybe Naranja and community center building as a whole, there are obviously a lot of expanded services associated with your parks. And we're kind of looking at, and so that's bucket number two. Bucket number three is really that big picture stuff. And so the partnership that Christy mentioned with AmFi, we kind of look at Naranja and the community center as being big, big projects. Yes, they're expanding services, but they're really going to change those parks in many ways, shape, or form. So we're including that in the visionary bucket, along with all of the connectivity analysis associated with the CIP. So this is kind of some assumptions. They have to be financially viable, which we still need to kind of ensure that we go through and check the box, that we want to include projects within this plan that at the very least are going to get started within 10 years. You may not have ribbon cuttings completely, But the idea of them getting started is that you would they would be funded. Obviously, I think we're being responsive to all of the data collected and the feedback. We want to ensure that they're consistent with other planning efforts. And of course, they're based on 2021 construction costs. So we have not applied any escalators at this point to these numbers. So it is purely based on 2021. So the sustainable projects lifecycle replacement, you can see that the community center site, there's about $4 million of lifecycle replacement associated with that. El Conquistador has some small lifecycle replacement. Honeybee has some small lifecycle replacement associated with it. As I mentioned, and we don't want to run through every last detail of this, but Cray and Riverfront and Steampunk have some lifecycle replacement to it. Thoag and West Lambert also have some small lifecycle replacement that we just want to ensure that we keep these things on the radar, because we can't just be about expanding upon the system without recognizing that there's lifecycle replacement. And then, of course, we have the aquatic center that also has some lifecycle replacement to it. So there's about $13 million total of just lifecycle replacement. So if you did not implement the concept plans, you did not implement the community center, you are still looking to have to go in to almost every one of these parks and have about $13 million of reinvestment into them over the next 10 years. And I think that's a big takeaway, because when you think about your next master plan, you're going to have another set of lifecycle replacement that you're going to have to consider. So I think it's just important to recognize that when you build something, you know, you're eventually going to have to lifecycle replace it. And anytime you build something, nothing lasts forever. Expanded services, this is where the big ticket items start to come into play with regards to taking, you know, the lifecycle replacement stuff and setting it aside and saying, how are we being responsive to community need? And how are we trying to better meet community need by expanding the services within the community center site, Cray, Riverfront, and Steam Pump, and saying what's the cost of doing that? And that's approximately $11 million, including some small expanded services with regards to the Big Wash Trailhead and the CDO shared use path. Then when we get into the visionary projects, this is where it starts to add up. And I've broken this out into a few slides just because there's so many numbers. But we're kind of allocating right now about $1.5 million for improvements to the Diamond Athletic Fields, as Chrissy mentioned before, associated with an AmFi school district partnership. Naranja Park, which we showed, $17 million. The community center building in and of itself, we're including that, just the building, of about a $9 million price tag. Then we move on to all of the trail projects. Have shown every one of these previously, so you're at about 10.3, somewhere 10.3, 10.5, $11 million associated with that. And then some smaller stuff that you always want to keep your eye on the prize. One, your master plan is going to be 10 years. So, and that's going to be a big ticket item in 10 years. And it'll probably be about $200,000. And of course, a comprehensive trails master plan. That is something that I think has come up at via the mayor and town council in some town council work sessions and council meetings. And so we wanted to be responsive to that as well. So the grand total of those total visionary projects is $38 million. So what does this look like total? So in breaking it down by tier, sustainable projects, about $13 million. The expanded service projects, $10 million. And then the big picture visionary projects, $38 million. So again, just to break that $38 million down, 10.3 of that is trails. $17 million of that is Naranja Park. And then about another $8.9 million of that is the community center building. And so that makes up pretty much that's where the big chunk of money is when it comes to the visionary projects. So grand total of somewhere around $62 million. When we look at it, trying to break it out, recognizing that this is a 10-year plan, we're just looking at it in terms of short-term and long-term. And so you can see that there's significant dollars in the first 5 years. And then about, so two-thirds, I think, of basically what we're recommending is within the next 5 years in terms of getting funded. And then the latter years, the out years 6 through 10, the remaining third, or about $20 million. And then to take it a step further, we're trying to prioritize this, right? And so, this is the priority. And so this is just recommended and this is just preliminary. But Naranja Park, it has been around for quite a long time. And part of why we're recommending this as a one fell swoop project is that we do not want Naranja Park to be a construction site for the next 10 or 15 years by phasing this. There's also, and Christy said it very eloquently earlier, generational equity. And so we don't want to kick the can down the road too far with regard to Naranja Park, so that the citizens that really participated in this master planning process get to experience the improvements associated with it. The community center and building and site, the town made a commitment when they purchased the property that they were going to not only purchase it, but set aside funding specific to improve upon it. And that is not just associated with the golf courses. That includes the community center and the site. So we've identified that as a project of priority. And then we've identified a number of the connectivity connections associated with the connectivity analysis. We've identified just four at this point. It does not mean that we can't incorporate more, but the Tangerine Road to Rancho Vistoso was one, the pedestrian bridge for, you know, across the CDO Wash, the CDO Wash to James Cray, and then Naranja. So we're really trying to, you know, connect the community north to south, but also do a good job of connecting east to west when we consider connecting to destination locations within your community. The Aquatic Center is a signature facility, but we also know it's got a lot of moving parts and a lot of use. And so reinvesting in the life cycle replacement associated with that facility over the next 5 years is going to be important to number one, continuing to establish and reestablish it as one of your signature facilities, but also at the same time to provide high quality and safe experiences, while at the same time really trying to minimize the facility not being in use, for example, if the pump room fails or backwash filters fail. I mean, that would be a significant failure, I believe, on the town's part to not to basically not project knowing that that's going to happen. Steam Pump Ranch, and then, of course, Amphi School District. So this is, I think, where we really want some feedback from you all. Numbers aside, I think, at this point, because they're magnitude of cost estimates, but really kind of some feedback with regards to the recommended priority that's, again, preliminary and looking for some feedback from you all.
Thank you, Mike. Member Coyle, go ahead.
Yeah. Now we've learned a new phrase, Christy, buckets. just so I understand, with the three buckets, at first when I read through the presentation, bucket one, sustainable, is that something that is already included in your existing annual budgets?
Member Coyle, these are, it depends. Some small items are, but the larger ticket items, and I'll use the Aquatic Center, for example, there are some large ticket items that would have to be part of the regular capital improvement recommendations. And that's how the larger ticket items get funded. So, for example, this fiscal year, we're addressing $500,000 at Steam Pump Ranch doing a restoration project. And so while that's a quirky one in terms of life cycle replacement, it still goes to being a capital project.
Okay. Christy, that portion that would represent capital improvement called 50 or 60, is that something that you would be planning to go forward to Mayor and Council now saying, hey, we need a 10-year funding model for this, or would it be segmented into different portions?
That's what we're wanting to do with you all through the course of, to get us to the end through, I think, March is when we will present the final recommendation for your approval and then for us to send that to council. That's why we need your feedback. $62 million is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And I believe that we're all realistic here and understanding that we're not going to be able to find $62 million in the next 10 years. So what we need to do is really understand from your perspective as a park and recreation board, where's the pulse? What's your sense? What's your priority? We need to understand that. So that'll help us drill down to what the final recommendation will be for the plan.
Might be an unfair question, but I have never stopped before. would this be kind of a separate bonded item over a 10-year, you know, spend that might be paid back over 20?
And Member Coyle, I don't know how the funding mechanism is going to be right now. The philosophy is a pay as you go. And okay, that's why we ask for those lump sums annually for either new projects or life cycle replacement projects. And so, you know, the funding mechanisms, there's a variety of things that are available, but right now the general philosophy is pay as you go. And so that's something that we need to understand and embrace and be ready, and have that understanding, but certainly open to other suggestions or recommendations from the board.
Thanks for the clarity. I appreciate it very much.
All right. It looks like Chair Temple had his hand up next, so we'll go to you, Chair Temple.
Okay, thank you. I think, Christy, you answered part of my question. I was under the assumption, as you stated, that this is premised on based upon pay as you go. Is that a correct statement?
Well, again, $62 million is a lot of money, and pay as you go will take a really long time to get there. So that's okay. Why it's important for us to understand priorities, and because in 10 years, I do not believe that the town of Oro Valley can accomplish $62 million of park and recreation amenities in 10 years.
I would agree. Right.
That's not who we are. That's not in Oro Valley's DNA.
Yeah. Mike, are you there? Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Is Mike there?
Yes.
Okay. This may be, an unfair question to you, but I'll ask it nevertheless. On all the years you've done these type of projects, I understand no two are identical, but my question is, in general terms, have you been able to identify a best practice that came out of these things in terms of funding that might be of interest to us?
Well, I think, there are two or three very specific ways in which most park and recreation departments fund their improvements. One is a bond referendum. Two is grants. And grants are opportunities, potentially very specific opportunities tied to trails. There's a lot of grant money out there, but there's also a lot of competition for grant money when it comes to trails. And
Mike, I can interrupt you. Is that grant money at the state or federal level or both?
Correct. Absolutely. You're spot on there. Okay. And then number three is really a very specific taxing initiative similar to what was undertaken with regards to the community center, in which you earmark money out of a specific, in your case, sales tax, and it just basically continues to accumulate over time to fund that specific project. We work all over the country. And I will say that California probably has one of the most, progressive yet high taxation initiatives when it comes to parks and recreation, because they pass sales taxes left and right, up and down, similar to what you did associated with the community center. So they will have what they call measures, and a measure will be specific funding for kid programs or specific funding for trails or specific funding for aquatics. But I mean, it's not to say that you can't consider other funding sources, but those are the big three that you're probably looking at. The biggest concern for me with regards to your system isn't always this $40 million, $62 million price tag. It's the ongoing operational maintenance costs associated with it.
Yes.
And I've told Christy this before. You are a community of about 50,000 people, and you have some amazing signature facilities for a community of 50,000 people. The community center, granted, it needs renovation, but when you combine that with all of those tennis courts, the pickleball court, and the golf courses, then you have your aquatic center. And then you have the potential opportunity for the connectivity in your community, and you have some really strong community parks in Cray and Riverfront. But Naranja is a project that I think you have to make a decision on. Are you going to fully develop that park or not? It was purchased to be fully developed. You've attempted to try and fully develop it in the past. And that's obviously in your priority projects here. That's the biggest ticket item. So it's a big decision to make. And when you think about the priority projects and you think about the total down at the bottom, just look at the two at the top. I mean, that makes up over 75% of it. of the total of the priority projects. So in one of them, you already kind of have a designated funding stream for it. Am I well versed enough to say right now that that funding stream can support 13.9 million? I don't know that because we haven't had that that level of conversation, but it is important to recognize that you do have some funding stream to help support the implementation of the renovation of the community center building and the site aside from the golf courses.
Thank you, Mike. I believe member Odell had his hand raised next.
Yes, thank you. I understand the three buckets in each piece of these projects, but anytime you build any kind of CIP program, especially the visionary projects and some of the stuff that Mike is talking about just a few moments ago, I'm concerned about the O&M. Christy has a finite amount of staff right now to reasonably maintain the existing assets. But if you start adding to where is the cost on an annual basis for the additional staff, the additional services, the additional commodities, and so on and so forth? Does Pro Consulting have the ability to take each one of these line items and potentially have a formula or an estimate for the annual personnel type costs and O&M for each, Mike?
Member Odell, absolutely. That actually is a huge part of our business. Master planning is great, but I think where we as a firm has made our niche over the last 25 years is really on the operation side of the equation. There's two sides to the operation side. One is the revenue side, and can you generate revenue to offset the expenditures? With some of your facilities, such as the community center and Naranja Park, absolutely. You can identify funding sources to reduce the burden on the general fund, so that we're talking about what we call a net subsidy. So taking your total expenditures that go into managing your community center and what's the user fee charges that you can charge to offset that cost to understand what the net subsidy is. The trails, for example, do not have any cost recovery associated with it. It'll be purely a maintenance cost. But yes, we absolutely can do that as part of this project.
I think that'd be very helpful from a priority standpoint in taking each one of these projects and determining where they would be on the list. So,
okay.
That'd be my recommendation.
Thanks, Member Odell. For our board members out there, I understand as co-hosts, you guys don't all have the ability to raise your hand. I'll look into why Zoom is acting that way. So as a board member, if you have a comment, feel free to just jump in there. It looks like Member Antonia Landau had her hand up next, and I believe Member Wood also has something to say.
My question revolves around this list with recommended priority projects. Is there a timeline for each of these projects in regards to, I do also think it's important that we're able to get some completed projects out and not be under construction for 10 years. And so is there some sort of way to know the estimate for each of these priority projects about how long they would take to complete?
I would say that the idea behind the priority projects, and I'll answer the question very generally without necessarily being able to dive into what the design side is and the construction renovation side is. But the idea behind the priority projects is that they would be funded within 5 years, so that you would have the ability to at the very least move on what we call the soft side of it, meaning the design side of the projects. And then construction would then follow after that. Depending upon the project, the design phase could last somewhere between, I would say, 9 months and 18 months until you are actually be able to begin construction. So the idea is that within, 5 years, so I would reasonably say probably July of 2026 that you would be able to identify funding to be able to move forward with the construction of these projects. Not, all of them wouldn't happen in July of 2026, but by then that's ideally where you would want to be at if you wanted to move forward with all of these.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Member Landau. Member Wood?
Hi, I just went out and came back in and I fixed my raise hand thing for anybody else. 3-4 years ago, we voted on Naranja Park funding and it didn't pass, but I was trying to remember how much that was and if it was defeated by a large amount or was it kind of close? Chrissy, do you know?
Member Wood, it was 17 million and only partially built out the park, and it and the community voted not to fund that project and significantly. I don't remember what the percentage was, but it was pretty high.
Okay, that's close enough. I just wondered, but it's the same.
If I can help you out, it was over 2/3. It went down by about 68% against.
Okay, question answered. Thanks.
Thank you, Member Wood. Again, for board members out there, as a co-host, you won't see the raised hand option. So that gives you the ability to just unmute yourself and ask a question.
Yeah, this is Philip. I don't know who was next in line here, but I do have a question.
Yep, you're up.
Okay. First of all, though, there's a lot of discussion about Naranja Park and some great questions. There's been a lot of history there, but I think we have to look at what a success that park has been to date. And I think that carries a lot of weight. And I agree with that, the improvements at Naranja Park being top on the list. As to whether or not a bond could pass, I would bet that there's a lot more support for it right now. But I don't see how we can move forward with any of these projects without a bond approval. So Naranja Park, I think it's a top priority, and I hope we can figure out a way to get that to move forward. The second one, the community center and building site, I guess the first question for Mike or Rebecca is, there's the building and there's the site. Was there any specific logic in not separating those two in terms of this priority list?
I think part of why I included both of them is into the project is, number one, I think a significant portion, not a huge significant portion, but something that you absolutely would have to do associated with improving the building is expanding the parking. That's a no-brainer. I mean, you can't expand the capacity of that building and fight the parking challenges. And then I think just simply the fact that you have really high utilization of your tennis courts and your pickleball courts right now, and they are in dire need of improvement. And since you own them and they get a high level of utilization right now, and will continue to get a high level of utilization, it's really a life cycle replacement issue for what I would call two very strong signature facilities within your community. And similar to why I included the aquatic center. So I just included them in one fell swoop because you, I think it would, you'd probably do a disservice to a lot of different customers and create a lot of problems about why are you improving the community center when you're not doing the tennis courts and, or the pickleball courts. I just think a lot of people use that site and that's why we included it. Could it be parceled out? Could it be phased over, you know, a 5-year period? Absolutely. And I would imagine it probably would. But it's one site and I think you want to treat it as one site, especially given the fact that you have some major life cycle replacement issues with regards to the courts. You have parking, and then, of course, you have the facility. They kind of all work together.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Anna Clark here. Sorry, I don't have the ability to raise my hand. So in regards to the community center, do we know what the membership is, and more specifically, who falls in as golfers versus fitness, and what the breakdown is of those specific memberships?
I can take that. Vice Chair Clark, before COVID, and I'll use that as our baseline because we strive to get back there as a facility, and as a country, we strive to get back there. We had over 2,000 memberships. That was just for the fitness space. That does not include the golf memberships. I can get you the remainder of the breakdown in terms of how many were classic, how many are premium, how many are family, etc. I can get that for you. I just don't have that at my fingertips.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question is kind of for the Amplify School Partnership plan. I think that's something that we really should bring up to the top because it will take a long time, even if we do decide to bond and things to get everything built out. But I just really feel that the use of those fields, we need quicker. They're there. It doesn't cost a lot. And I would also advocate that we could potentially use some of those some of that space in the summertime. You know, when I was working for Parks and Rec, that was one of the things that we did was use the schools for our summer programs. And I just felt that they ran a lot smoother now or then than they do now. So, anyway, just my 2 cents there.
Thank you. Hey, Christy.
Thank you.
Christy. Remember, you just mentioned the, hope I'm not stepping on Anna, that the membership in terms of fitness and golf, is there any, excuse my lack of knowledge, but is there any additional charge for usage of tennis courts or pickleball courts since they're so highly utilized?
No, you have a membership to this facility as a classic member, and then you have I believe it's 24 hours advance to reserve courts. As a premium member, you have, I believe, 72 hours to advance. You have a larger window. You also have access to the courts at the Push Ridge property that was mentioned earlier, as well as the aquatic center. So we've kind of built in a scalable membership opportunity based on what you prefer to do. And then, of course, the full golf membership has access to the community center as well. With Indigo Golf, they have created some golf only memberships. So it's a reduced membership rate, but it is for only golf. It does not impact the community center.
Understand, thanks.
You're welcome.
Chair Temple?
Yes, thanks, Brandon. Mike, I'd like to go back to your comment earlier to one of my what if questions, the bonding, grants, taxing initiatives. I know we've got a couple special sessions coming up. Is it possible that we can really dial down into each one of those and see what's realistic? And I'm looking down the road. You know, we need to make our recommendation to council. And I'd like to be able to get as specifically as we possibly can on those three funding options.
Yeah, I think the best way to say that is one of the things that I shared with Christy earlier is to identify on a project-by-project basis. Can we make some assumptions about funding sources that are reasonable and realistic for each one of these projects?
That's exactly where I'm coming from, Mike.
Yeah, and so I think that's ideally. So I'll take the trail projects as an example. Let's just say the bridge across the CDO Wash is $1 million. Can we say that we can, are there grants out there that would allow us to, at the very least, potentially apply for, and I'm being hypothetical here, but potentially apply for a $500,000 grant to fund that project. And then we would say, all right, well, grants, we can reasonably assume that we can get $500,000 in grant money for that. If we can't get $500,000 in grant money for that, then we have to find other funding sources to do it. Or if we put $500,000 worth of eggs in that basket and we don't get it, then we don't move forward with that project until we do. Those are all of the, what I would call the implementation choices that you have associated with funding. And I can tell you that we have done this pretty successfully. I think the one thing that I would be very cautious on is how aggressive you can move forward with all of these potential projects associated with the funding sources. Because a lot of people have a tendency to think that you can do all of this and you can even try to get all the dollars to line up, but there's still a human element to planning and executing each and every one of these projects as individual projects that have to be taken into consideration. And there's still only so many hours in a day, days in a week, weeks in a month, months in a year in which you can dedicate staff time to doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's a conversation that I think Christy and I still have to have when we start to, what I would say, really probably whittle this down a little bit.
Okay. That's music to my ears, Mike, to be honest with you. So I'm glad we had this dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, Chair Temple. Do any other board members have any other comment before we move on? Christy, do you have anything?
No, Brendan, I don't.
So I think one of the things, I just want to be completely clear on some of the next steps that are based on your dialogue. And obviously, I think a lot of the conversation is around funding. Your capacity for us to identify funding sources that would allow these projects to move forward, number one, on the construction side of the equation, but then number two, also to ensure that we know what you're getting into on the O&M side. And I think those are kind of two, you know, based on all of the conversations that you all had, those are two big takeaways for us as we move forward to help prioritize, reprioritize, expand, shrink the CIP list as a whole, and also the priority projects. Is there anything else that I'm missing? And I think one of the things I want to be clear on is that when we consider O&M, there were a number of conversations about how much money you take in now. And so I think it's important when we talk about O&M, we're not just going to talk about it on the the expenditure side of the equation, but we're also going to talk about it on the cost recovery side of the equation. So if something costs you $1 million to operate, i.e. the community center, how much money can you look to bring in to offset that $1 million? Is it 500,000? Is it 750,000? Is it 900,000? Is it the full boat? Is there anything else that we're missing or I'm missing?
Yeah, Mike, this is Philip Saletta. I guess one other thing that, and I don't know exactly why you broke it in basically to 1 to 5 years and 6 to 10 years, but over that 10-year horizon, there are certainly some projects that could be done in 1 to 3 years, other projects maybe 3 to 7, and then 7 to 10. I guess if there's anything to look at, is there a better way to break down that 10-year time frame?
Okay.
And again, if you don't, if it's not that critical, I certainly understand that. But, you know, it seems like it's just in two major pieces, 1 to 5 and then 6 to 10.
Yeah, I would agree. And Member Saletta, I think it's just the fact that the way local government does their CIP, you typically do a 5-year window.
Sure.
And that's, I think part of it. The other thing was just to kind of try and keep it simple at this point. Could we go through the entire list and say, all right, well, here's your 10-year CIP, just like you did in a previous life, and say, here's the money I want in 2022 and 2023 and 2024. We could do that, but sometimes when we're doing master planning projects, it becomes a little cumbersome and puts too many parameters around town council to look at it through that lens. Typically councils and mayors like to have a little bit of flexibility when they start talking about how they're going to afford $60 million in improvements. So that was kind of the rationale. Could we break it down further? Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Mike, Joe Coyle here.
Yes, sir.
Your question about direction in terms of other pursuits, in terms of fundings, the grants, I assume you have access to a database of existing grants within Fed and state concepts, and that comes out in CDC's, monthly and stuff.
Sure.
Do you provide a grant writing service, or is that something we'd be looking to Christie's staff to do, having written a number of grant requests in my life?
Well, I mean, we always could write grants, as part of an ongoing, contract with you all. Typically we turn that quote unquote implementation over to the agency. But again, that, sure, it's something that you could do. And, there's a lot of, cities, towns, counties that actually contract out grant writing. It's not necessarily done in-house. That can be to an individual, that can be to a firm. But yes, that is typically something that can be done. PROS does have the capacity to do that. However, I think that's a strategic implementation suggestion that we would certainly want to have input from the town on.
Christy, do we have any assigned grant writers on staff?
Yeah, Member Coyle, we actually have a certified grant writer on staff. You've met her a couple times, Nancy Ellis.
Okay.
And actually, I'm going to be just giving a brief update a little bit later in our department report. But she wrote a grant recently to Arizona Game and Fish, and we got a $50,000 grant, which is a matching grant for the restroom at the archery range. And so we've been, she's been successful in getting grants for us, some small, some large.
Mm-hmm.
She does have a database that comes across frequently. And so as things do peak that have the potential to that we would qualify for. That's, you know, as you said, you've written grants before. It's a fine art, and really it's, do you qualify? And that's where the becomes tough. And then, as Mike said, shared earlier, the trails are, well, the land and water conservation fund is now back, but that means everybody is going to be going after it as well. So, but we do have a professional on staff that has the technical chops about her that can tackle that.
Great. Congratulations on the recent wind tour.
Yeah. And then I did want to share before we get going, and Brandon asked me if I had anything else and I said no, but after I started thinking about it, so the, you know, the recommended priority projects, the preliminary list, can you go back to that? So that's from, you know, from PROS Consulting, working with me, looking at, you know, community needs, looking at, et cetera. What I would like to hear from you all is, does this make sense to you? Is this a direction? I have heard from some, yes, we need to build. Yes, absolutely. Naranja Park is the priority. We need to address O&M. You know, and so I've heard some of that. If some of you can either just say, yes, this is the good direction, or you know what, we're missing something. So that way we can really focus, you know, kind of focus on certain things as we continue to proceed further. And then as we start to have these conversations with council, we can say, you know, we vetted this through our board. And from their perspective, this seems to be the community. This is the community priorities from the board's perspective. Member Landau, it looks like you have your hand up.
One of the things I heard previous in today's meeting, and additionally throughout the end of the year last year, was that the addition of trails is so important to our when we got the community feedback. Do we feel like the additional trails on this list would fully address that priority that the community has said they needed?
Christy, I would say, and Rebecca, feel free to jump in, but these are what we would call, you know, some major significant connections to help move people in your community. You know, in particular, two of them that would have other funding sources potentially associated with them. You know, Pima County for the Tangerine Road to Rancho Vistoso and the Naranja Drive. But I think when we looked at this, we looked at it and said, getting over the CDO wash is really important, not
to- Uh-oh, Mike, we lost you.
Just from Riverfront, but from, you know, neighborhoods. Am I back?
You are back. Mike, rewind it maybe like a minute.
Okay. So the question that was posed was with regards to the trails. We felt like these four were fairly significant, given the fact that two of them have other potential funding sources associated with them. But also they have the ability to make some major connections both north from a very northern part of your community to a southern part of your community, as well as then east-west. Is it the, you know, all of the lists that Rebecca showed earlier? No, but we felt like that given that trails was such a significant need in the community, but also that we have to approach these as individual projects, that if you are able to make progress with regards to these four specifically, you would have strong advocacy to continue to move trail projects forward.
Great. Thank you for walking me through that thought process of this list. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, can't raise my hand here, Anna Clark. I going over all these concept plans, I think the one I'm most excited for is the full build out of Naranja Park. Is there any kind of timeline, how long that would take? Say that we did bond and all of that, how long would that take?
I would say that it's probably an 18-month design process, and then another 12 to 18 months to complete it. I think one of the challenges, and Rebecca, please chime in on this because this is not my complete sweet spot, but I think some of the challenges associated with Naranja is simply topography and the fact that we're talking about a quarry. So there are certain things that we don't know about with regards to soil conditions that could do that. And that's part and parcel why we said to do it in all one fell swoop was because, number one, you can really plan for to overcome all of those challenges all at once and maybe achieve economies of savings or scale. But number two, just not having the site be a construction site for the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. I think the devil is in the details. And that cost estimate is, as we said before, is pretty preliminary. Rebecca?
Yeah, I'll add that, we added as part of the generation of that cost some pretty significant earthwork numbers because we understand that that is going to be a big item as far as the overall development, and it needs to be done correctly and ideally, as Mike said, all at one time so that we're planning for the full build out and the full impact of what that means to the topography of the site at once. And you just get that added value for doing it in one shot versus several smaller shots and getting different contractors in place and things like that. So I would agree with Mike on your time frame. I think, like you said, about an 18-month design for that. And then the construction, depending on the conditions that they find out there, I would say it's probably another 18 months or so.
Thank you. Then the other feedback I have for the community center, I feel like one of the things that we're really missing there is something for our teens. They might not, there's nowhere really, okay, we've got a skate park in there. Splash pads are a little bit younger, in all of these plans, teens who are not necessarily active in organized sports, but there's really not a lot offered for them really anywhere, and particularly at the community center.
Yeah, Anna, this is the question that I think has, I want to say haunted me for the last, I hate to say this, but probably my entering my 30th year of my career is teens. And everybody has a tendency to want to put teens in a place, in a space. And I have seen so many teen centers developed and so many teen centers fail because the last thing that teens want is to be just with teenagers. The part of what makes teenagers and their psyche is the fact that they're wanting to become adults. And so they want to be in locations where they don't want to be treated like a bunch of little kids. But they also know that they're not quite adults, but they want to be in that adulty kind of space. And the one thing that I think from a community center perspective that I have seen happen more and more is that you have really tried to introduce individual fitness to kids and open that fitness center up to them either through programs or even early fitness center orientations. The only other thing that I would say that I think is still kind of on the cusp and not quite fully understood yet is spaces associated with like esports and gaming. I think that is certainly something pre-COVID that was really starting to take off. in particular in what I would call communities that are younger, in which they have started to design and develop individual spaces within community centers for that specific activity. But the other way that we try to handle teens is through very creative programming. And that, I think, is part and parcel to the multi-purpose spaces that, that Clint has designed within the building. The one thing about the building, and Clint, I'm not trying to steal your thunder here, but you're pretty confined.
Go for it.
There's not really any way that you can expand the footprint of that building without taking something away. So you're somewhat limited to Clint being able and Carlos being able to express their full creativity, I think, the way they would want to if you were building something from scratch.
Mike, if I could just jump in on that one. Member Chair Temple, members of the committee, they've been tough, tough spaces. And we've seen them with the rec centers we've done up in the Valley. We've had video games in there. So, of course, those go out of fashion in a heartbeat. There are pool tables in there. Well, not really a lot of kids are playing pool today. So something that is flexible, something that is part of the space, it's basically a lot of hanging out and checking each other out, checking their phones, checking video games, seem to be the things that attract them and allow some members to hang out while other people may be doing a climbing wall, or they may be on a skate park, skate ramp kind of situation. But it is a tough, tough, tough problem.
Yeah. And the one thing I can say is that one of the things that I think we have heard loud and clear from teens across the country is they want spaces where they can go, where they can kind of be not supervised, but supervised. They want to have access to potential Wi-Fi and electrical outlets and picnic tables and shade. And if you throw in restrooms associated with that, You've done a good job in with regards to providing the non-active teen the spaces that they're looking for. And so to my comment earlier about how do you engage teens within your parks and recreation system, I strongly believe it is less about design spaces with walls and roofs and conditioned space, and more about how you incorporate them into the utilization of your parks.
I agree.
Joe Coyle here. And I think Clint and Mike just hit upon the thing. We have to make sure there's super Wi-Fi wherever we do anything for the teens. But one comment, and not to get to give feedback, but since you're asking for it, the original question, Mike, was about the priority projects and how that might be. And Christy asked the same thing. Just going to pull back at something. 12 years ago, I was on the citizens board that drove the biggest bonding issue in the county, the RTA, Regional Transportation. And I was intimately involved with it. And the reason why it passed, because Pima County has traditionally turned no on all these kinds of bonding issues. But that passed, was that you gave everybody throughout the county something to like in their little community. So I think it's important not to hang so much on which comes first, but rather that everybody gets something. Because if you amortize a $60 million bond over a static residence in this town, that comes out to about $10 a month over 10 years. Just pointing out, we always talk big numbers, but if you break it down to what it actually takes, to what Joe said earlier, yeah, it got defeated resoundingly because we kept on talking about 3-4 years ago as $17 million, as opposed to breaking it down to how many dollars per month. The reason why a lot of, having lived in California, a lot of those things get passed for taxing is they break them down to half cents on things. And it seems like it is more acceptable. But that's the two things that I would say is the priority has to make sure we get more of them in there. Tell everybody about everything so they can see, hey, this is my walking path up in, you know, Rancho Vistosa, and then this is my, you know, bridge down in, you know, over the Wash. Give people more reasons to say, oh, I can accept this, whether it be bonding or taxing or any kind of special other issues. And also, the more plans that you can come out with, the greater your chance for your grant writers to be able to attack. You know, it's a numbers game. You apply for 100 and you get 5. Well, that's what has to happen. So I'll stop. Thank you.
And I would agree with you wholeheartedly, which is, I think, part and parcel why there's diversity within the project priority list, from trails to Naranja to the community center to the partnerships and even steam pump. I think there's a lot of diversity within that project list that has the ability to have a lot of advocates for it, because they can see themselves at the end of the day using the improvements associated with that project list.
Christy, this is Philip. You know, getting back to your question on the feedback of the list there, Mike, can you go back to the list?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You know, I support this list. I think, as Joe said, you know, somebody has to get a little bit of everything. You know, somebody has to get a little piece of the pie along the way. And I think this is very broad for the community. One of the things that I like about it is it's not the full $62 million. I mean, it's a lot of great projects. You know, it's a significant amount of dollars, but it's not the full $62 million. The other thing, and this is sort of a minor point, but I think if you're going to move forward with Naranja Park, I think that shared use path on Naranja Drive has to be a pretty important trail connection there for particularly teenagers to ride their bike over. And families. So I think that's an important piece with respect to that Naranja Drive shared use path being maybe put up a little higher up the list in terms of Naranja Park. But overall, I support this.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Matt. I do think this all works well. The connectivity part, I think, answers a lot of the issues that the Rancho Vistoso group with paths and everything. I see a lot of people walking along Rancho Vistoso going over towards the seniors over there at Sun City. And, you know, those paths, the concrete sidewalks aren't very wide. So that would really be nice for them. And I think you might get a little bit of buy-in there. Like you said, everybody gets a little bit of something here. And I do agree that, you know, the best way to sell these things is it's so much per month or so much per household per year, rather than throwing out that giant number of, you know, 60, 70 million bucks. So, yeah, I think this is a good plan. I think you guys listen to the community, and they should appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you.
So, all right.
You want to go to the next slide?
Sure. All right. So as we kind of come down the home stretch here, obviously finalizing the capital improvement plan, and then the biggie, which you all touched on, is not just identifying costs, but identifying funding and revenue strategies for the capital improvement plan. We will incorporate the O&M costs and potential cost recovery associated with these as well. I will caution you that we're not going to do what I would call full-blown pro formas for each of these, but using the information that we have at our disposal in conjunction with town budgets and costs, We feel like we'll be pretty reasonable in the ballpark on the O&M side of the equation. And then, of course, the strategic action plan is part and parcel what comes first, what comes second, what comes third, not just necessarily related to capital improvements, but some of the other things that we'll talk about at our next meeting, which is really about programs and pricing strategies on the O&M side, and then the final master plan. So this is kind of where we're at on the home stretch, so to speak. We have done the virtual community meeting last Thursday. We're doing this meeting tonight. We are then going to be in front of town council, and that will be a long meeting because we're not just going to go through what we went through tonight, but we're going to back up a little bit and do the park classification, level of service standards, and equity mapping, and then get into everything we went into tonight. And then February 9th, we're back in front of you more on the operations and maintenance side. But this is kind of our charge right now in terms of bringing it home. And I cannot thank you enough for your time and attention and your very thought-provoking questions this evening. It's a lot of material and really, really appreciate you powering through with us.
Thank you, Mike. And thank you, board members, for your participation. Chair Temple, we can move forward with opening it up.
Do we have public comments that want to come in?
Go ahead and just officially open this agenda item for public comment, and we'll see what comes through.
Okay. At this time, we'd like to officially open the floor to public comments. Anyone who is participating, again, through video link may raise their hand. Those on the phone can dial *9. If you could do that now, we would appreciate it.
Okay, Chair Temple, I think you're clear to move forward.
Okay. We'll close it for public comment. The next one is Christy, the department update. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair Temple. And before I jump into the department report, I just want to reiterate again what Mike said. Thank you so much for the great conversation tonight. We're really starting to hit a stride, and your comments and thoughtfulness and questions are just greatly appreciated. Thank you so very much for that. The Aquatic Center and the Community Center continue to be open through COVID. We have stringent requirements in terms of temperature checks, et cetera, to come in, and stringent cleaning. And also access to the site is by appointment only. So we're taking care of our facility, we're taking care of our clients, and we're taking care of our staff in terms of safety, and still being able to provide really good recreation programming or recreation access to our community. We do have limited programming, though, just again, because of COVID. And for example, spring break is coming up. We're going to be doing a virtual camp, very similar to what we did in the summer, led by staff at the community center. That'll be done on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then we'll have in-person camp at Catalina State Park, masked up, taking all safety precautions. And that'll be done on Tuesday and Thursday. So that information will be live on our site. But, you know, we're still plugging away in terms of our programming. We will be doing a drive-in live concert at Steampunk Ranch in March. So keep your eye on that as well. Project-wise, things that were funded this fiscal year, I want to give you an update. As you all know, the Naranja Playground project was completed in December. We also finished the asphalt of the new parking lot. So that is curing. And then the final phase is to install lighting at that space. But I've been out there frequently, and I can tell you there are kids from 2 days to 102 days. I mean, it runs a gamut. It's so fun just to go out there and watch people. And I got a text from our park superintendent a few months ago, and he's like, I just left Naranja Park, and I overheard a kid say, Grandpa, this is the best day of my life. So anyway, that's why we do this work, right? It's just the joy that the child had, and just the heartfelt sweetness that the grandpa felt, just that's why we do what we do. Anyway, that's what happened in Naranja Park. We had funding to improve the batting cage and pitching cage at Riverfront Park. That was a partnership with additional funding and some sweat labor from the Oro Valley Fast Pitch Softball Group. So the site has been demoed. The large structure has been ordered. We're doing all of the engineering. So that project is underway. We expect that to be done this spring. And as I mentioned earlier, the restroom at Naranja Park, the archery space, where the restroom's on order. We're working through some detail with Pima County. The geotech has been done. So we're looking at that project also to be done later this spring. The golf course irrigation project, phase one, which is the Conquistador course. So those that aren't that familiar with which side. So if you kind of look on La Cañada, pretty much everything to the west, excluding maybe a couple holes, but all of the holes, that's the Conquistador side. So we've hired a consultant. He's in the process of working on his design. Our goal is to go out to bid in early March. And so we are on pace with that project. And then, of course, the Steam Pump Ranch, we have secured a design consultant, Poster Frost McDonald, to do the restoration of the garage. And so that project is getting started. And we hope to be out to bid here later in the spring. And then also included in that project is the enhancements in the push house, and to include a security system and a fire suppression system. So still quite a few projects to get us through the end of the fiscal year, but it's really good stuff, and it's exciting stuff. And I just, again, want to thank you all for your participation tonight. And I look forward to additional conversations and keeping moving and hitting our stride. So anyway, thank you all.
Thank you, Christy.
And if I may, Chair, just before we end, and since our attorney's in the house, this is also in my department report, so I can talk about it. I just want to, Chair Temple, thank you so much for your leadership this past year. It has been probably one of the most difficult and challenging time to be a chair of a board when you're used to having face-to-face around the table, having those great, human-to-human conversations. Now we're on this Brady Bunch environment, and you've embraced it and have worked tirelessly to ensure that we stay together as a group. And I just thank you so much for the time that you've provided. And I know that this isn't a goodbye. You're still here for the rest of the year, but I appreciate it. I very much appreciate the leadership that you provided to this board.
Likewise, Christy.
And I believe that's the end of my report.
Okay.
Chair Temple, you want me to read the last item here?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Last on the agenda before adjournment is future agenda items.
Just as a reminder, Travis may bring forth general topics for my fellow members. We can bring forth general topics for future meetings and agendas. Discussion must be limited to clarification. Board members, do we have any items that fit into that category for next time? I don't believe we have any, Brandon, so I'll move on to adjournment. Seeing there's no further business, I would like to entertain a motion to adjourn. It's at 9:11 p.m. May I have a second?
Okay. I'll second it.
Don't everyone speak at the same time. Okay, Annie second it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Thank you so much. Great working with you. I'll still be part of the team. See you next February. Be safe.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.